like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box for another week. We are leading into the bye rounds of 2013, and this time last year, Molly. By the way, my name is Monty, and the next voice you're going to hear is Molly. But at this time last year, we were all crying into our beer or our non-alcoholic beverages, if that's what you prefer. But I feel like this year, with the new rule changes, life is looking a whole lot better. And while people are still obsessing about donuts, it's a matter of whether they're obsessing over one donut or maybe half a donut if they have to play someone like a Thurlow or some spud like that. Molly, instead of actually eating four or five donuts as they were at this time last year, so it's a vast improvement, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I'm just looking at my own side, and I might actually have a side this week, so that's it's good to know.
I think I have the bare 18, which is not great, especially since I have to play couple of blokes who I'm not expecting more than about 50 from, but that's just the way that the sides have come down. There haven't been a huge amount of there hasn't been a huge amount of carnage in the teams. Of course, we are recording this on Thursday night after the teams for this round six games have come out, or at least the squads for the last two, because of course we have another Monday night game, Molly, which is going to annoy people once again as it did last week. Because, of course, those who were hoping to get on the Mark Hutchings bandwagon didn't get confirmation about whether he was actually in the side before the Monday night game pre-lockout last week. But eventually he did, and, of course, he's gone up 80,000 in both competitions, I believe. And he's, again, in an extended interchange this week. But he will, I believe, the cut's going to be made for that being a Sunday game before the lockout. But, again, as I said, the Monday game, which of course does include very important players like Dane Swan, who might get a rest, or Pendlebury, or Luke Ball, or obviously Sam Dwyer's not in that game already, so who knows whether Ben Kennedy might get a rest, or some of these other younger kids who are playing. So another week of worries, especially for Dream Team coaches, less so for Supercoach coaches, because they have an extra trade up their sleeve. I suppose that's the other big difference this week, or in the bye weeks, Molly. I'm finding it much more enjoyable sitting there with three trades to play with in Supercoach rather than two in Dream Team.
Well, that's a definite difference, and yeah, it is more enjoyable to have that extra trade. The interesting thing will be how that will play out past the bye rounds, when we all have less trades left in the Dream Team competition in the Supercoach competition, and we still have two a week in the Supercoach competition.
Now, I have burnt every single trade possible available to me so far in Supercoach, Molly. I don't know if you're the same, but would it be prudent not to use all three each week in Supercoach, or do you just go hard or go home within that competition? Just burn them as while you've got them.
No, I mean, there is definite logic in not burning them all too early, so hanging on to a couple for later on. That definitely could be the way to go.
I suppose the opposite to that is that you might not expect to see a lot more downgrade possibilities in the second half of the year, so you might not see a Kyle Martin or a Nathan Hrovat or Tom Mitchell, who we'll talk about later in the show. You might not see too many of those guys coming in the second half of the year. So, I mean, for instance, in Supercoach, I'm looking at downgrading someone to Mitchell and then upgrading two other mid-prices or cash cows up to premiums. And I see that as being a valid move, but perhaps I won't be able to do that each week. But at least at this stage, I think that's a valid move for coaches who can do that. But I guess for me with Supercoach, of course, you don't have unlimited trades. So now is probably not the time to go to stepping stones is what I'm trying to say. Now in Supercoach is the time to be getting those keepers, because keeper, the word keeper still does have a fair bit more meaning in Supercoach than it does in Dream Team, Molly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're going to have to look for, is to start getting that sides finalised. So starting to get the good players, which is a bit tricky during the bye rounds because you probably want to plug holes as well. So it's going to be a very tricky tightrope we walk in that sense.
All right, now we are going to do a full round review, even though six of the teams who we're going to be talking about this week are not playing next week's, or as in the round just coming. And one of those sides, of course, is the Brisbane Lions, who played against Collingwood on Friday night, Molly. And those of us who held on to Brent Maloney all the way through from the start, or those of us who brought him in after a few rounds, as I did, we were punished, really, for our tardiness in getting him out of our sides because he picked up an injury. I suppose you could say that's luck, but nevertheless, the result is that he has dropped a lot of the money he gained from the start of the season. And even though he is on bye this week, I'm not sure how most sides are structured, but I would imagine a lot of sides would be going into round 11 with the bare minimum of people out, sort of maximize. So, because I'm guessing that a lot of teams have a lot more round 13 bye players than rounds 11 and 12. So I'm actually trading Maloney out this week because my plan has been to trade round 13 bye players, you know, to make four of those trades after rounds 11 and 12. So actually trading out Maloney this week makes sense, even if it's actually to another round 11 player, because I don't want to waste a trade next week on someone, you know, because that'll probably mean I'll eat a donut somewhere else because I've got those trades planned out. So does that make sense to you, Molly?
Oh, yeah, I understand what you're saying. And I thought about the same thing. I have a lot of round 13 players, but I'm probably going to be able to bring in some round 12 players instead for players who aren't playing. A few of my rookies have sort of kicked on a bit, so that makes it a little bit more tricky in some senses. But, yeah, I think there's some room to move there with a lot of those players. And you know, I've got probably the right amount of round 12 players now. So if next week I move some of my – I'll probably be doing a sort of a similar thing, but moving 13s out for 11s.
Yep. Yep. No, look, there's a fair few 11s who will be coming – who will be trade-inable or very, very much tradable into your side. Obviously, Hrovat from the Dogs, we will talk about later in the show, but there are a fair few premiums who you could look at, who I'm sure we'll look at next week. So as far as trade-in targets, we'll probably be looking more about that next week, and we're looking about trade-out targets this week. But I guess the point with Maloney, Molly, is that he's not a keeper in the sense that anyone's a keeper these days. You were always going to upgrade him, but I think now is the time to do that because his break even after that terrible score is just going to be astronomical for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right, and everyone was probably looking to use him as that stepping stone, so now would be the perfect time
to step off. Right, now another player who, well, he's not quite in the same boat, but he had a similar score on the weekend, Pierce Hanley. He was tagged by McCaffer and did not react well to it at all. Got by far his lowest score of the year, 35 in Dream Team and 49 in Supercoach, which is about 25-odd lower than his previous low for the year in both competitions. It didn't look like he was carrying anything apart from McCaffer on his back. But I think the logic here is different than with Maloney, Molly, because surely Hanley is a keeper. He is going to be in those top six backs. And most of the top, or the contenders for the top six backs, do put in a terrible performance like this. So I think we can excuse this one, can't we?
I think so, yeah. And he's a class act and someone who has scored fairly well over the last couple of years. So it's one out of the box for him. It doesn't happen very often, and you wouldn't expect to happen again during the season.
Yep, I agree with that. On the Collingwood side, Kyle Martin is a... Look, he's come up at a sort of a weird time, Molly, because being a Collingwood player, he does have a round 13 bye, so you wouldn't expect to be trading him in during the bye period, because especially because there are so many other Collingwood players and round 13 bye players in your midfield. You know, your Stantons and Watsons and all the Collingwood midfielders, O'Meara, Whitfield. There's all these players who are who have round 13 byes. But I feel like with Martin, he looks such a great prospect that it actually makes sense to trade him in. If you are going to trade him in, it would actually make sense to do so this week, Molly. So, and you might even only actually have him for a couple of weeks. So I would prefer to come out of the buys without O'Meara and Whitfield, say, and with Martin as a, if not a keeper, then certainly someone who you'd be expecting to play out the rest of the season on your fantasy midfield bench as your M9 or M10. He looks like a roll gold cash cow to me, who can also even play, you know, start in your side when required. So, I mean, it's tricky to get a player with that buy, given that he's going to have that price rise after round 12. After round 11, you would expect. So he'll go up, you know. Well, I mean, if he keeps on scoring like this, then he'll be going up that sort of 80 to 100,000 that Hutchings did this week. So I feel like if you're going to get him, this week is the time. But I mean, it's not really in a lot of coaches' plans to get in a buy 13 midfield, you know, a rookie midfielder at this stage. So can you see many scenarios where people would actually get him in?
Yeah, it's a bit tricky with him him only playing the one game, and then he'll still play this week and probably next week, so get that third one in. So it would be very tough to bring him in for those weeks. As we sort of just said, you know, we're trying to get it so that these guys we're getting out the round 13 buyers. So I think not many people will be looking that way. They might be looking more at some of the other options of first game players. I can think of another one that has a round 12 buy that we're going to talk about in a minute.
Yep.
That might be a better option in the same way.
Yep. Look, I mean, I think it's one where normally you would have an extra week to look at these blokes, but there are a number of rookies this week who have come out of the box with a massive score. And you look at that Collingwood side, and obviously Dwyer is due to come back in, didn't come in back in this week. You have Elliott's still there, he's still starter worthy. Didak obviously coming in with the subs vest. He looks like a perfect sub to me. He looks like the 22nd player in the Collingwood structure right now. And the other player, Sinclair, of course. I think basically Martin plays Sinclair's role, from what I can see, Fasolo being out for the year. So there is actually a spot in that 21 that Martin looks like he's going to be a much better bet than Sinclair for. So, I think there's an opportunity there. And I think Martin's going to play a lot of games, assuming he keeps fit. So, I mean, there are a wealth of options, but I think he's a pretty good one if you can manage to get him into your plans. Now, for the Carlton and Western Sydney game, Molly, for those of us who do have a lot of round 13 midfielders, Carlton players, of course, being amongst those, it looks to me like those of us who have Mark Murphy are going to have to bite the bullet on him. Another poor score in that game, and I think whether it's he's carrying the injury picked up a couple of weeks ago, or whether it's because he's being used forward, which was probably related to his injury anyway, but he wasn't actually setting the world on fire in the first six to eight weeks anyway. He looks like he's the odd man out. You know, you can keep the likes of your Pendlebury and Stanton and Watson and Swan, those sort of players. Murphy looks like the odd man out to me.
Yeah, and he got cursed, so that didn't help him at all. And so, yeah, he's a tough one to pick on because, you know, I know myself, I thought he might be due to turn it around, and it just didn't happen. So, Yeah, he's one who would be on my list of guys to possibly move on for next round. And after this round, probably for me, I'm going to have to wear it that, you know, his price may drop a fair bit after this game. So, you know, that's something. It's already dropped since I bought him. So, you know, that could be a bit of pill to swallow. But it could be a case of my and people like me's displeasure, but that you other players may be able to get a nice little bargain there for him as he comes down.
There are a number of players who are, you know, who we consider as premiums, and I mean, surprisingly to me, I mean, there was a move, a shift about a year or two ago, where a bunch of the high-class inside midfielders all seemed to gain about 5 or 10 points in their scoring, and that was due to the some of the rule changes. We talked about that a year or two ago. I'm thinking about Mitchell and Joel Selwood. Mark Murphy was probably one of those. Judd even increased his numbers. Kennedy was probably another one of those. And with the rule changes this year, I mean, a lot of those guys have actually dropped away. Selwood, who we'll talk about later in the show, Murphy hasn't had a great year. Mitchell's starting to, his numbers aren't as great as you might have thought they would have been. I think Kennedy's had a poorer start to the year than he had last year, although he had a sensational start to the year last year. But I do wonder whether the rule changes with diving at the knees and a bunch of other rules have led to less stoppages has meant that those inside midfielders like Murphy and Mitchell and the players I mentioned have had less opportunities to extract, which is their specialty, and that means that players like this we need to sit back a bit and have a bit of a think about it and think, well, these inside mids who we assumed were rolled gold 110-plus premiums, we need to shift our focus off these guys and towards the outside guys because a lot more ball these days is uncontested and comes from the spread rather than the stoppage.
Yeah, no, that's a really good... A really good thought. I would have, that could very well be what is happening here, and therefore, as you say, we need to start looking at things slightly different and try and account for those changes in gameplay.
All right, on the Western Sydney side now, again, I struggle to find anyone to talk about, but Matthew Bunting is on the bubble this week with 40s in both competitions. I think we can probably look past Bunting. Again, another player who has a round 13 bye, so it's pretty difficult to bring him in. Two fairly middling scores. He's already over 200 in both competitions anyway due to his games from last year, so I think we can ignore him, can't we, Molly?
Yeah, I'm not sold on him. So
Had big raps when he was drafted the previous year, but yeah, he hasn't really showed at this stage. So maybe in 3 or 4 years we might see the best of Matthew Bunting, but at this stage, not looking like it.
Yeah, too high a price. So yeah, no.
All right, now one news story that really jumped out at me today in the footy media, Molly, was that Richard Douglas apparently is the second highest ranked person in these new champion data related rankings of players in the AFL. He's the second most important player in the AFL, apparently, according to these rankings, and certainly his fantasy numbers have reflected that. Now, I've talked about this with some Crow fans, and my view is, now maybe my view is a bit behind the times. I do watch, you know, all the Adelaide games, as I watch every game. It does seem to me that I'm not sure there's a huge shift away from the truism of the Crows of previous years, where if you shut down Thompson and you shut down Dangerfield, then the Crows were nowhere. People don't seem to shut down Dangerfield for all of the game. Thompson's hasn't had a great year, but Sloan is the one who's really stepped up, or at least did last year, and he's the one who is taggable, but Even though Douglas has had a great year, I'm not sure anyone would actually go to Douglas and tag him. That to me is the sign of a good midfield. If you have a bunch of players who are so dangerous that opposition analysts would tag them. I mean, I'm thinking here about the Eagles midfield. Now, Gaff gets tagged. Maston probably should get tagged. Well, Al Hearn, obviously, he's not a midfielder, but who's the other player I'm thinking of who gets tagged? Well, Pretis does get tagged. Kerr gets tagged. So, and in the Fremantle side, of course, you have Daniel Pearce sometimes gets tagged, Stephen Hill, Barlow sometimes, Mundy sometimes get tagged. Now, if you're an opposition analyst looking at Adelaide, I think Thompson and Dangerfield are the only players, and maybe Sloan these days, are the only players you would tag. But I do remember, I mean, you look at Douglas's numbers, and they're much like Bernie Vince's breakout numbers from his breakout year, which was in 2009. He went from 75 to 100, and the year after, and several years afterwards, I kept on banging on about trying to find the next Bernie Vince. Well, I think we found him this year, Molly, and his name is Richard Douglas, because he similarly has gone from mid-70s to 100 in Dream Team without much fanfare, but I'm not sure that means he is, has joined the elite. I'm not sure he's the second best player in the competition. Nevertheless, for fantasy purposes, so I mean that's more of a general football argument, I suppose, and you can speak to that. But from a fantasy point of view, do you think Douglas is actually going to stay up there for the rest of the season? Does he have a chance of being in the top eight midfielders for the rest of the season?
Well, I mean, he's got a chance of staying up, but. In Dream Team, that's not going to put him in the top eight, I wouldn't have thought. I would have thought they would have been getting closer to 110. So I think he'll be a little bit up and down. They've had a reasonable draw so far, and I guess they even have a reasonable draw to the end of the season, although two times versus West Coast and a few of the other good sides to come, that's going to be tricky. But yeah, I think he's been great, and if you've had him, you've done very well. You know, 120k price rise, and you know, if you get him into the buy rounds at this sort of level, if you have finish it off with a good game this week and next week against Sydney and Richmond, then you may be looking to upgrade him to one of the top guys. So
He's still adding owners. I mean, he added about 500 owners in both competitions this week. So, I mean, even though he's not owned very much, but people are still getting on board.
Yeah, but I mean, there can be some people who follow it for the price that they're at rather than where they'll go and whether they can, you know, step it up to that top level. I guess, I mean, if you had him as 7 or 8, you'd be very happy. So. One of the things looking at his score, it's been consistent to a max, you know, 73 low.
Yep.
That's very good, and you would take that. So I mean, he could be someone you bring in.
Adelaide is a team that does have a very nice draw if you're looking for fantasy finals, because I think it's the North and then a couple of the bottom four sides. Leading up to the grand final against West Coast, so at the fantasy grand final, that is. So that's if you're into your league win, if you're working towards that, then that's obviously something to keep an eye on. Right, on the other side of that game, Molly, Jack Hanneth delivered a 10 in Dream Team and an 11 in Supercoach. It really wasn't the day for big men, so perhaps we can excuse him for that, but. Now, I mean, we don't know whether that means he's going to be dropped for next week. The rise of Zachary Clark perhaps means that they don't necessarily need Hanneth in that side, especially on days when it's wet. He was subbed off at halftime in that game after not looking at all like he was ever going to get into play, with Rutten just treating him with disrespect. But for those who've had him as their fourth ruck. And you know, they might be eating a donut, or well, not eating a donut, but they might be suffering a little bit with startability of some of their players because they haven't got Blickavs. We'll talk about that a bit later, and of course they haven't got Hanneth with the bye, and they're worried about next week about him not playing after the bye, when of course Blickavs is also on a bye. So, but I feel like with a player like Hanneth, Molly. him playing and getting you a startable score was going to be a bonus anyway, so you don't need to worry about it, do you?
I wouldn't have thought so. Yeah, he was someone who some people may have needed last week to fill in for Leuenberger if they didn't pull the trigger last week. But, yeah, that was a pretty disappointing score. And, you know, his scores haven't been great, so it's probably time to look elsewhere for his owners if there are any.
Well, I think my point, though, is not to panic about him. I mean, he's got Brisbane in round 12. I presume that Ross Lyon will see, right, okay, Brisbane have got are struggling for big men in the back line. Let's load up on big men to play against them, and thus Hannah gets another shot, I would have thought.
Yeah, I'm not sure. How many weeks was Merritt out for? Is he due back or not?
I think he's due back, yeah. But even so, they're still struggling for a small...
Yeah, so, I mean, defenders. Maybe wear it for another week, but, yeah, not much longer, I wouldn't have thought.
Right, on to the Sydney-Essendon game, Molly, which was probably the one of the more enjoyable games of the week from a football purist point of view. And, yes, I am going to go off on the long run for another big coaching rant in a second, Molly, so get ready for that one. But the happy news for fantasy coaches is that Tom Mitchell looks like the real deal. He came on fairly early after Tommy Walsh sadly did his hamstring and is now out for the year and possibly for his career if he goes back to Ireland. But... as far as Tom Mitchell goes, he looks like he came off the assembly line of Sydney players. I don't know. I mean, a lot of teams, Molly, end up recruiting a bunch of players who end up playing like their coach. I don't know who this assembly line of players, you know, your Hanbury and Jack and Kennedy and O'Keefe and who's the other one I'm thinking of? Parker is another one like that. These short blokes, sort of short blokes, but they're just built like brick outhouses, and they go all day, and they're tough, and they're mean, and, you know, I mean, perhaps they're all trying to, perhaps the recruitment is trying to find Paul Kellys, and you want to have a bunch of, you know, 22 Paul Kellys out there, which that's certainly, if you had 22 Paul Kellys, you'd be winning a fair few football games, let me tell you, but... look, I mean, it does look to me like Tom Mitchell is straight from that mould, and he looks like he just walks into that side, and even though he wore the green vest in that first game, I can't see him wearing the green vest in that second game, particularly given who they've named on that bench. I don't see him getting the vest for the rest of the year. He, again, a bit like Kyle Martin, he looks like he should be playing senior football. He probably should have been playing it earlier than this, but they've held him back from until now. You know, happy days for them. But he looks like he needs to be in a lot of fantasy teams right now, as early as this week, Molly.
Yeah, I mean, to start off at the sub and to score 98 is just huge. So, yeah, he's had huge raps in the media. The few people who were involved with him, I think, at the AIS have just talked him up. So I can't see a reason not to take the risk on him. You may get burnt a little bit, but... you know, if he doesn't pay off, but I think it's a risk worth taking.
I don't know if you recall the first quarter of James Magner in the first game that Melbourne played last year, Molly. He scored 44 points in Dream Team in his first quarter of league football. Now, Mitchell came on, I believe, in the first quarter, and his first full quarter, which was the second quarter, he scored 53 points in Dream Team and then went on with it. I mean, he's the first... rookie, as far as I can tell from my incomplete records, who's actually earned a Superman cape in his first full quarter of senior football. That's just amazing. I mean, how could they start him in a vest next week? I couldn't understand anyone thinking that. He's going to be playing, he's going to be in that 21, he's going to be on the 18. I can't even see him starting on the bench. He's a starter. But we'll talk about Matt Jones in a second. Matt Jones to Tom Mitchell seems to be an absolute no-brainer. If you don't do it, you don't have a brain. That seems so obvious to me.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that logic.
Right, also in the Sydney side, now we had the sad news today that Martin Matner Marty Matner, of course, as he's mostly known, has retired as of now. He will not play another game for the Sydney Football Club. So That tells me, Molly, that those fantasy coaches who still have Dane Rampey on their fantasy back line should probably keep him there for the rest of the year, because I'm not sure he's going to make a huge heap of money, but I feel like he is the perfect, B8, the last back on your bench, who is probably not going to score more than a 40 or a 50, but he's the panic button who you hit when everyone else is gone. So I don't think he's a cash cow. I think he's that reliable guy who you can just slot in if disasters happen elsewhere in your back line, and thus keeping him in that position and assuming you're not going to upgrade him, because I don't think there's a whole lot of people coming down the turnpike who are actually going to replace him in that B8 role. I think if you took the chance on Rampy and still have him, I think keeping him in that role of the B8 is the perfect strategy for your fantasy backline.
Yeah, that's another good call. He's played very well and been a little bit fairly consistent without being spectacular. So as you say, if you've got him, hold on to him. He's gonna do good and may even, you know, with Matner's retirement, you know, kick on a little bit more. But he's done a really good job for them and it's got that round 12 bye, so that's sort of safe as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot to like about his games.
All right, on the Eastern side, Molly. Now I've got David Zaharakis listed here in the show rundown, but this is the opportunity for me to come off the long run about yet another coach who has failed to take into account Sydney's game plan. And, of course, I think John Lohmeyer comprehensively outcoached James Hurd on the weekend. And, looking at the opposition analysis, Molly, you have to say at this point, you have to shut down McVay and Malcheski. Now, they sent Comer as a defensive forward to Malcheski, and that sort of worked, even though Malcheski kicked those two goals, as he seems to pull those out of, I don't know where he pulls them out of, Molly. It just drives me crazy. But anyway, he managed, I think, 25 odd possessions, which was not great, but you could have worn that. But they lined up Zaharakis on McVay, and Zaharakis went to the midfield, and he allowed McVay to sit a kick behind the play, and that did not work at all. And James Hurd had no plan B. There was no one that they had in that side who was going to go near McVay, and McVay just played a loose role and just racked up possessions and was pretty much best on ground. I think I might have even given it to him, even though his numbers weren't quite as good as some other players. But it just seems to me that opposition coaches don't have... I mean, it seems to me so obvious how to combat Sydney, but I guess from a fantasy point of view, I mean, you know, putting all that to one side, that sort of serious football talk, but does this mean that players like Zaharakis are going to be asked to play more stay-at-home roles in future because that was such a failure of coaching philosophy? Or do you think that, I mean, Jetta obviously is probably not really a defensive forward. Comer is okay at that role. Winderlich doesn't seem to be... I mean, he played back and forward in that game. I don't know what the thinking was behind him. He probably should have been the one who went to McVay, but that didn't work at all. So what is the solution there for Essendon when they play sides who they have a couple of players? I mean, if they come up against Hawthorn, they need to lock down on Birchall and probably Gibson or Guerra or Smith. I mean, they need to get those runners from the back line and lock them down. So what happens to Essendon? Do they use Zaharakis in a deeper forward role in a more defensive aspect, or does he continue to run up in the midfield and chase kicks?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is. I think he's someone they see as one of their better midfielders. So they're not going to waste him on a defensive role at this stage. So I think that will be the case. But as for who they have as a defensive forward, I'm not sure they've got one at the moment, and whether they can produce one. So you know, they used to, strangely enough, use the names, Monfries.
Yes.
And he used to do a pretty good job. I know whenever he played Hawthorn, he normally had a pretty good game.
Yep.
Picking up the ones who needed to be picked up and then going the other way. But I'm not sure who they've got in the bank to do that sort of a role now.
I mean, I'd be looking at someone like Myers to see if he could actually do that. I mean, I know he's a backman, and I mean, he's a strange sort of body type, Myers. He's one of those athletic types. I think we talked about that 2 or 3 weeks ago, but I wonder whether they'll actually use him in that role. But as I say, I mean, Windelik is sitting right there, and there's a very good point you make about Monfries. Maybe they just haven't, they haven't got that flexibility in their structure to be able to replace Monfries. That's a good point. On the Geelong Gold Coast game, Molly. Now, Mark Blickhaves, if you were starting him in place of someone like Leuenberger, and you were hoping for at least a week out of him as a startable commodity, he certainly came through in spades with a 94 in Dream Team and 107 in Supercoach, but he is being rested this week, and so is Harry Taylor, who I've talked about. I actually own him in Supercoach, and he's relatively important in Supercoach, or startable in Supercoach. He's owned by about 6% of the competition in both comps, so he's fairly reasonably well owned. But I feel with both of these guys, you don't need to worry about either of these guys. They will be back after their round 12 bye. This is just a case where it's a bit unlucky. They're going to they're being rested. They're giving a 2 week rest as opposed to the normal bye. So there's no reason to trade either of these guys out, is my point, Molly.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Blitzcabs, I actually, surprisingly enough, I couldn't. This was probably more my own bad play in some senses. Couldn't decide on a second ruckman I liked a lot. So I actually brought in Grimley to replace Leuenberger and had Blitzkav play last week. So I was quite happy with his score last week. But I am left with no second ruckman this week.
So what was you thinking there with Grimley? We haven't run over the Hawthorn side yet, but I haven't got him on the
running sheet. His first game, I liked it a lot, and I liked his second game. Now the big question will be whether he can hold his spot, and there's probably a huge doubt on that. But the way he played, it's going to be hard to drop him as well. So.
All right. Well, we'll
it was speculative, and I'm not saying it was a good move. It's probably a sign of how my side's going anyway, and and going back to the great Monty rule, where sometimes it's better to pick a player you're going to have fun watching than if not sure. So
true.
I thought take him for a week or two and then work it out from there. So after the bye rounds, it all filtered through.
Now, to round out the Geelong talk, I need to mention Joel Selwood here, because I was looking at round 12 midfielders to bring in. I'm looking for a bit of value, but this probably goes on with the discussion we had before about whether inside midfielders, the ones who were very inside, are struggling this year with the lack of stoppages. And I feel like Selwood is one of those players who fits that bill, Molly. I'm not sure he's getting tagged, but he just doesn't seem to be getting the numbers that he was last year. I mean, he had that big 120-plus in the Hawthorn game to start the season, and another big 120-plus in the Sydney game. But other than that, he hasn't put in too many scores, over 100. So he hasn't beaten up on the top teams, or the bottom teams, I should say. I mean, only 83 in that game against Gold Coast. Now, of course, Gold Coast put up a pretty good fight in that game, but still, you would expect him to, get some decent numbers in a game like that. I mean, it seems to me it's not necessarily that players who are inside are going to struggle, but maybe it's just the players who don't spread. So if you are a good inside player, but then also you're able to spread, you have the foot speed to get away from congestion. I don't feel field players like Selwood or Mitchell or Kennedy are really known for their foot speed. So maybe that's actually the issue, not necessarily the insideness, but the fact that they're actually a bit slow.
Yeah, so that could be it as well, and perhaps he'll need to play a different role. I mean, after those early games, you know, everyone was talking him up as the next best player ever to have played the game.
The next Ablett, that's right.
Yeah, he's sort of come back a bit from that, but I don't think there's too much panic to be had just yet on his front.
But I suppose the point is, do you see him as a buy low candidate now, or do you think he's actually going to turn around the second half?
Oh yeah. I would be tempted to take the risk on him if you had that sort of decision to make.
Mm. I've always liked him as a Supercoach special. I had him in my team a couple of years, but yeah, it's a bit hard to see where that improvement's going to come from in the second half of the year. But you know, you need to take chances to win the big prizes. Now, on the Gold Coast side, Molly, now this is another player who's only just played his first game this week. We're talking about a few of those players, but of course this bye situation means that there's going to be a bit of that going around. So, talking about Tom Nichols from the Gold Coast, of course, with Zach Smith not in the team at the moment due to injury, they played Nichols and Gringe in that side last week, and Gringe has now been dropped. So it looks like Nichols, if there was a competition for a spot there, it looks like Nichols, just for the moment, has won that spot. So his numbers in that game were pretty decent for the price he's at. He is rookie priced. So, again, I've sort of been warning against coaches burning a trade in their ruck stocks, but could you see justification for like a Hanneth to a Nichols, or you're talking there about Grimley. I suppose we'll talk about him next week because he's on the bubble, but can you see a player like Nichols actually playing most of the rest of the season? I mean, with a team like Gold Coast, they do tend to rotate their rucks, especially in the second half of the year. They do tend to want to get games into players because they're not obviously challenging for the eight. I'm not sure the Gold Coast this week will even, this year will challenge for the eight. So they do tend to rotate their ruckman in the second half of the year. So how many games do you see Thomas Nichols getting in the second half of the year? And do you think he's going to be scoring anywhere near the 70s he did in that game?
I think he'll be very up and down, but being a ruck, you know, there's an option for you to bring in. Although the Gold Coast, again, another round 13 buyer, although not many of them in the ruck stock. So that's one positive, I would have thought.
I'm not sure buyers matter all that much in the rucks, to be honest.
No, it's going to be really hit or miss on that front. So, yeah, I think he's someone who, in the rucks, especially if you're not keen to hold on to Blitz Cavs, or, you know, there's another one of them that you want to move on, he's a chance to be around for that.
I wonder how many coaches will actually go Blickos to Nichols next week with Blickos on the bye. If you were going to do that, you might as well do it this week, I suppose, especially if you've got...
Because he's missing anyway, so...
Mm. Yeah. All right. On the Bulldogs and the Port Adelaide game, a rare win for the Bulldogs up in Darwin. Now, Nathan Hrovat, and of course he's got the bye this week, but again, he's another player who I think in one of the competitions I'm actually bringing in this week, because he does look like he is... I mean, we've got a fair few options in the mids for trade-in targets. As we said, Martin, Hutchings is still an option, and Hrovat, we're looking at here. Mitchell will be the other one, of course. So, do you think... I mean, I'm looking at all these options and I'm thinking, I actually want three of these guys, but I mean, ideally you'd want to actually have eight premium midfielders by the end of this process. So maybe you might want Mitchell and you might want either Hutchings or Martin, or maybe you might want to keep one of O'Meara or Whitfield maybe. So do you think there's Hrovat's actually going to be more popular than those guys, or is he going to be forgotten a bit? Because I guess the reason coaches would bring him in next week is because he's the one who's on the bubble, and you're gonna get two games out of him through the bye period. But is that the only reason people are going to bring him in, or is it just the bye situation, or do you think he's actually going to outperform those guys? You know, the Martin, Mitchell, and Hutchings.
No, I wouldn't say he will outperform them, but you know, he's had some nice games so far, so he's got a chance to play to a good level. Although his run home's a little bit tricky. He's still got the Swans and Collingwood and Hawthorn in that mix, but Melbourne twice. And GWS in there as well is a sort of a little bit of a candy there for him. So, you know, in the next 3 weeks, he's got, after the bye, he's got, or the 4 weeks, he's got two tricky teams and two easy teams. So, you know, there's something to like there about him.
But I mean, I could actually see people saying, right, I'll get Hrovat in after round 11, and then I'll actually trade him to Martin after Martin's round 13 bye, because Martin would have only had one price increase, whereas Hrovat would have had three.
Yep.
So you'd still be trading down. The only fly in that ointment is that Hrovat's next two games in round 14 and 15 are Melbourne and GWS, so you'd actually expect him to score well in that period. So that's going to be interesting to see what people decide with that one. But I would expect Hrovat to be in a lot of teams, but I think people will probably do it more for the because of the bye structure rather than his actual... I think out of those four, he does look like the one who is going to score the least, but we'll still have to see how that plans out. But also on the Bulldogs side, Molly, if he hadn't got injured, I would have given him the pumpkin, because this was a perfect illustration of the pumpkin icon. Poor old Kobe Stephens. And it wasn't even really his fault. He did get a calf injury. He wasn't scoring anywhere near that he was last week, even before the calf injury in the second quarter. He didn't get a kick all night. He had 10 handballs. That was pretty much the sum total of his fantasy scoring in that game, 23 in Dream Team and 34 in Supercoach. He moved to full forward and he basically couldn't run. He could barely walk as it was, and he did a few nice things. He did a few things for the team, and the fact that he was able to stay out there meant that they were able to rotate in the Darwin Heat, and so he did his job for the team. Nevertheless, he is on his bye this week, Molly, and if people were expecting him to make a lot of money after his 139 in Dream Team 127 the previous week against St Kilda, unfortunately, they have struck a bit of bad luck. So his break-even is now 50s in both competitions. That is probably a bit less than what you expect him to score, because he'd been averaging about 70-odd in the three games previous to that, against some good opposition too. So if you do have him, is it now time to get rid of him, because he's coming up against Collingwood after the bye, and then the Tigers, and it's, as I said, it's the same draw obviously as Hrovat, and then Melbourne and GWS in rounds 14 and 15. So, do you want to wait that extra month to get rid of Stephens, or is now the time?
The round 11 bye actually is interesting, and again, he's got the two easier games, so I would probably be tempted to hold him through the bye round and try and look elsewhere for your trades. Mm. But yeah, I think that's a better plan.
Trading after round 10, you would normally go from... I mean, you've normally got your buy situation set up, so you're probably only trading from one buy to another. I could certainly see Stephens to Hrovat, and then actually, I mean, and given the what we talked about before about how you've probably got your post round 11 and 12 buy post round 11 and 12 trades planned out already, and usually you're trading out 13s to 11s and 12s. Now would this would be the perfect time to actually go Stephens to Hrovat, if that's, you know, part of your, if you're able to do that as part of your plans. But other than that, it might be the smart thing to do to hold on to him for the extra month. On the Port Adelaide side, Molly, I couldn't find a huge amount to get excited about, but I suppose the score that that jumped out at me was Jack Homch, of course, did come from the Gold Coast in the off-season. That was his first game of the season for Port. And 83 in Dream Team and 121 in Supercoach. Now, it's probably too early to get him right now, but he does have GWS directly after the bye, Molly, in round 12. So maybe he might be another player who you might actually want to get in after his first game. But, I mean, this is a player who I like, and I was not sure why Gold Coast gave him up. I thought he was actually going to be part of their best 22, you know, leading up to what they would hope would be their finals run and their grand final, you know, attempts in future years. I didn't see why they necessarily got rid of him, but he wasn't part of the plans at Gold Coast for whatever reason. But anyway, the upshot of that was that he is effectively replacing in that Port structure Jackson Trengove, who of course has a long-term injury. So his job security, to me, given his good form in that game, he does seem to have fairly strong job security. So would you be looking to bring him in? I mean, there's not too many backs who are coming through, I suppose, is the point there. So Homsch, now his price, of course, is not rookie priced by any stretch of the imagination. It's the implied price is about 60 in Dream Team and 75 in Supercoach. Nevertheless, his numbers in that first game were far higher than that. Now, he's only playing the Dogs, admittedly, but what sort of average can we expect out of him? I mean, it's only one data point, so it's very hard to extrapolate, but does that price just scare you away from the start, Molly, or is it just too much?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you'd be a brave man. You know, he may turn out to be a stepping stone, but, you know, you'd want to see that second game, I think.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, and then that second game will be against GWS, as I say. The draw does get very hard after that. Sydney, Collingwood, Essendon, Hawthorn. That's about as tough a month after that, you know, yeah, after he gets off the bubble as he'd want. And, you know, he is only playing in for Port Adelaide, and they are probably going to get flogged in each and every one of those games, at least after the GWS game. So, yes, it's a tough one, but I was trying to make a case to talk about a Port player every week, Molly, so I did my duty there. Anyway, on to the Melbourne Hawthorn game, Molly. This is a game which I can't say I enjoyed all that much. It wasn't all that great to watch, sadly. But especially for those of us who have been hanging on to Matt Jones, we have been punished for our sins by watching him get the red vest in that game and thus obviously get the 40-odd in both competitions, and his cash generation, which had been, you know, it had still been going okay. He was up to about 350 in both competitions. He'd gained about 240 in both competitions. His break-even is now 84 in Dream Team and 110 in Supercoach. He has not actually been scoring anywhere near that in Supercoach. He's had a few Dream Team scores of thereabouts, so maybe there's a case to keep him in Dream Team, but certainly for Supercoach, I think, as I said before, Matt Jones to Tom Mitchell seems like an absolute no-brainer to me this week.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think he's just about hit the wall and time to cash out on him. He's had such a good run, made you a lot of money, but I think it's time to move on. And although that round 12 bye, maybe you want to hold on to him, you know, coming out of that. But yeah, I think it's time to move on. And
Jazzo7 on the chat reminds me it was actually GWS that Homsch had played for.
Yeah, I did notice that.
And I should say also to Tabs in the chat, he was wondering who the top six backs will be, because I actually got asked that on Twitter during the week. We will actually be going through all of that during the bye weeks, because of course we'll only have six games to talk about, so we want to pad out the show with a bit more discussion on who we think the top six or two in both of those, in all of the positions will be. So I'm sure we'll get to that over the course of the bye rounds. Right. On the time for Hawk Talk, Molly, a fairly quick hawk talk, I suppose, because the one thing I wanted to talk about was, I don't know whether you saw the pre-game interview with Alistair Clarkson that Channel 7 did, Molly, but he was asked a surprisingly intelligent question about Jared Roughead, and the answer that he gave was that Roughead has actually been used in the centre circle, well, at the centre bounce, to provide a big body in the centre to win clearances. And this is a role that I had bought Sean Burgoyne in about a month ago in my dream team, Molly, because I was expecting him to be the one to play that role as the big, you know, the big experienced body who can, you know, do a bit of bullocking work and do a bit of blocking, as the phrase goes, to and get a fair few points being where the ball is. But it does seem like Clarkson has said, right, well, we've tried Burgoyne in there. No, Burgoyne's going to play forward. No, so we'll play Roughead in the middle. So is this something that's going to be continuing for the second half of the season, Molly? Because if so, I'm not liking the dream team or the super coach scoring potential of Sean Burgoyne. And in that case, Roughead is going to be the new, he could be the new Richo. I mean, if he's going to be playing midfield, because we're all talking earlier in the year about whether he's going to play forward or back. If he's going to play midfield, he's going to be scoring, you know, the 90s and 100s that he has in that game for the rest of the season, isn't he?
I wouldn't get too carried away with how much he's playing in the midfield. I mean, he's in the centre bounce a little bit, but not for huge. It's not like he's running around in the midfield. I mean, he had a tough start to the season. If you picked him up after about round three or round five, you've probably done a little bit okay. But yeah, I don't know that his scoring is going to be that huge, and he's probably a little bit under where he was last year. So I think he's having a good year from a football sense, a very good year from a football sense, but from a fantasy sense, you know, I'm not sure there's a lot of value there on him
forward. How does the ruck situation work there? So obviously Grimley's now playing with Bailey out. But Bailey's not injured, is he? He's been rested.
It is hard to know. I mean, the Grimley trade by me was very speculative and very week-to-week type thing. He is a chance that he could hold his spot, but, I mean, there's every chance that Bailey will come straight back in, and it was just a chance to give Grimley another run against a poor side and you know, a taste of AFL to go back to the VFL and see what he needs to work on. And also to give Bailey, who has had, you know, horrendous knee trouble, you know, a 2-week break instead of a 1-week break.
Now, so is Bailey still I could getting see him coming. Is Bailey still getting constant knee swelling and, you know, fluid in the knee?
I'm not sure on that. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a little bit of that, but yeah, I think he's still the number one ruckman with Hale backing him up. And normally what happens, my gut feel is to say the Hawks' sub-strategy most weeks, at least most weeks where there's competition, I think this week they subbed out Hodge because they could.
Yep.
I think most weeks the plan would be going in, assuming no injury, that Bailey would go out of the side late in the game, you know, at the point they want to make the sub to give them more run, and then Roughead would ruck the last, you know, take his turns in the ruck with Hale for the last quarter or so.
So, I mean, assuming that that's the, I mean, so Bailey comes back into the side, then Grimley actually is competing with Gunston, isn't he? Now, Gunston hasn't actually had a good year, has he?
No, he's been a little bit up and down. He has, yeah. So there definitely is a chance he mightn't hold his spot. But then again, I mean, the thing about Gunston is he's been playing a little bit on the wing as well, which is a bit different. So he could come into that role as well. But yeah, I think he is a guy who will be, you know, touch and go to hold on to that spot.
To me, it all comes down to the, well, I mean, would you call it the lack of development or the the different roles that Shields and Savage have been playing, because it seemed to me that, you know, you'd have Isaac Smith on one wing, and then you'd have either Shields or Savage on the other wing, and that seemed to be a good fit for me a year or two ago. But those two, Shields and Savage, have, I mean, I don't know whether you could say they've gone backwards, but the fact that they're using other players through there, like a Gunston. Well, I mean, Hill's obviously playing the Cyril role, of course, at the moment. But if they're using players like Gunston on the wing, that tells me that they haven't actually got a full midfield complement who are all fit and firing, because really that should be a midfield spot. But I mean, maybe modern football, you can play half-forward flankers off the wing, of course.
Yeah, well, I think it's a sign of Gunston's athleticism that he can play that role as much as those other guys. I mean... Yeah, Savage's role is playing for Box Hill at the moment and the occasional game in the ones. So, you know, I think there's a little bit to be disappointed about that as a Hawthorn fan and a fan of his. But, I don't know that it's a sign that – I don't know that I agree with Shields. He maybe hasn't gone on as much as he could have, but he did have a lot of injuries. I think it was last year. And even in the preseason this year, so that slowed him down a bit. But yeah, I think he's coming along okay, and he's more of a tagger than a guy who would play on the wing.
All right, that's enough Hawk talk. We've managed to stretch that out way longer than it should have been. So we'll move on to the North Melbourne St Kilda game, and the player I wanted to talk about here. I mean, I was looking at as I said, upgrading to a round 12 by premium midfielder today. And the choice to me came down to, well, I mean, there were obviously a bunch of Sydney players who I could have chosen, you know, Jack, Kennedy, those sort of players. But to me, if you're looking for value, you're looking a bit further down the price list. Joel Selwood obviously jumped out at me because he's been losing, you know, $25,000 a week in Supercoach, and probably about the same in Dream Team. But the other name that jumped out at me was Andrew Swallow, who has had his price depressed a bit across about a 5-week period, where he had only one DT ton and two Supercoach tons across from rounds 4 through 8, where I believe he was actually carrying an injury. So I think he might have got over that little hump. And bringing him in this week with Gold Coast, their next opponent, to me seems like a decent strategy if you are looking to bring in a round 12 by premium mid who's a bit of value. I like Swallow. Like Selwood, I do consider Swallow a Supercoach special, but so maybe he's... I mean, you look at his Dream Team numbers, and they haven't actually been all that different this year than they were last year. And they haven't actually been that much different for the last 4 years. So maybe he was a player who didn't follow that sort of template of the inside mids who added 5 or 10 points on their Dream Team and Supercoach scores overnight because of the way the rule structures were. So he seems to be immune from that particular issue, but... I like him as a Supercoach midfielder, and I think that he is underpriced at an implied price of, what's that, 108 at the moment. I think he can average 115s from here on in. The North draw, I suppose you could say that's, well, actually looking at that, so they've got GWS, they've got the Lions, Melbourne. Other than that, they're actually all pretty difficult. So, looking at that draw, it's not going to be easy. But I mean, he has shown that he can score well against the good sides. He had 125 against Hawthorn, had 124 against Adelaide, 137 against Collingwood. So I don't think the draw necessarily affects him. But I think he is slightly underpriced at the moment, and I'm actually getting him in Supercoach this week, Molly.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty good way of looking at him. He's starting to come good, I think, after a tough middle of the season. Not necessarily against great sides either. I mean, he had better scores against the better sides. So if he can have a good performance this week against Gold Coast, then, you know, he's got a chance to really kick on of it in the second half of the season, and he is a quality player.
Mm. Now, speaking of quality players, this is another player who is not necessarily underpriced. If anything, I think he's actually overpriced, because Jack Stephen from St Kilda, Molly, on the other side of that game, he has increased in price in Supercoach by 62,000. But I feel like he might actually be at the end of his tether. He's had four consecutive 100-plus scores in Supercoach. He's been averaging about the same in Dream Team, but I'm not sure he can keep that up. I would feel like if I had Jack Stephen and I've enjoyed those price increases, I'd actually want to go sideways with Stephen. I mean, I know he has a round 12 buy, so maybe he's a sort of player who you'd want to keep because he has a more valuable buy than some of those players around him. You might want to, you know, spend your trades on someone like someone who's got a round 13 buy. Now, he's got the West Coast this week, and of course we know the West Coast do tend to beat up on the lesser sides, and of course Melbourne in round 13. So maybe after round 13 you might want to consider getting rid of him. But I think he's probably at the peak of his price, and I'm not sure he is going to get all that close to the top eight midfield, Molly.
Yeah. No, I think you've called that pretty right. He was good last year, I think, from memory. He had forward eligibility, but he probably just hasn't cut it, you know, with the St Kilda's, still, you know, rebuilding their side.
Yep.
He was always going to have a tough year, and as much as BT loves him to death, he's not going to cut it, I don't think, in the top 10 for midfielders in either Supercoach or Dream Team. So, you know, if you've had him so far, you've made a nice little win out of that, and it's probably time to move him on.
It is noticeable that most of his humongous scores have come against the lesser sides. 133 against, I'm talking Supercoach here, 133 against the Dogs a couple of weeks ago, 123 against GWS. His biggest score came against Carlton, who were terrible in that game, 150. And I'm just looking at his draw. St Kilda has the top four sides in four of the last 6 weeks. So maybe you might be able to last it out until that Port game in round 17. But even so, they've actually got Frio twice in the second half of the season. And they've got the Tigers and the Blues before that round 17 game. So those two sides are both battling for finals, and St Kilda is not. I think, you know, now might be the time, or fairly soon might be the time to get off the Stephen bandwagon.
Yep.
Right, and finally, onto the West Coast and Richmond game. And as I said before, Molly, those who took the chance on Mark Hutchings were rewarded with a price increase of 83 grand in Dream Team and 70 grand in Supercoach. And his break even in both competitions is minus 60 plus, or minus, if you don't know what I mean. So, but, I mean, is it still too late to get on Hutchings? I mean, he's named again on an extended interchange, which indicates his job security is still questionable. He's been, I mean, he was a shining light for the Eagles in that game, I thought. I mean, I'm not sure why he was named an extended interchange. He outperformed a lot of his more credentialed teammates in that game. He should be in that side for the foreseeable future, I would have thought. So what do you think is his job security after... I mean, I don't know whether you watched that much of that game, but the Eagles just played horribly in that game. They got a lot of the ball, but they didn't do enough with it. And a player like Hutchings, I think, is someone who they need to refresh that midfield, because their midfield just did not perform on Sunday night.
Yeah,
Monday night, I should say.
Yeah, I hope that he still gets a bit more of a run. But, yeah, I think you could still pick him up again for a week or two so round 12, you know, if you're trying to get a few more round 12 players in, you could still pick him up now. But I guess, unfortunately, next week, after this week, it'll probably be a bit too late. So, You know, there's some risk there involved, but you know you're going to get one price rise out of him, and maybe it's just a stepping stone to a round 11 player for you.
Could you see someone trading in a Mitchell and a Hutchings this week, and then going through the buys, like starting the buys with a whole heap of money, and then just going bang bang, for the next four trades, just upgrade in every single one of those four trades?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely, I could. That's very much a chance to take advantage of the carnage in, you know, the buy rounds that you're still going to get a little bit of, and really upgrade out of it for rounds 12 and 13 and even round 14 to a lesser degree. Yeah, no, I could see that happening.
All right, and finally, on the Richmond side of that game, Nick Flosten. Now, this may be a bit heretical, Molly, but I know he was... I gave him the X factor in that game because he kicked three goals and was one of the better players in that game. He almost earned the Superman cape in the second quarter where he kicked a couple of those goals. But I think, actually, now might be the time to trade out Flosten. I mean, if you expect him to drop off in the second half of the season, which a lot of rookies do, his break-even is still 72 in Dream Team and 57 in Supercoach, but his draw has been fairly favourable, especially in those games against Port and Melbourne in round 7 and 8. That massive score he got in round 8 goes out of his price calculations next game. Now, I mean... Perhaps I'm looking at his draw and I'm thinking, okay, the Dogs in round 13 and the Saints in round 14, and then Gold Coast in round 16. Maybe I'm going a bit too early on this, but is Flosten a keeper? Or, I mean, it seems like people are relying a lot on Flosten and or Turlick to be a keeper in the back line. Can they go through another month, or is it actually time to start upgrading? Because a lot of the options that, if you're looking for upgrade targets in the backs, there's not that many roll gold options, I suppose, Molly. So I feel like people are going to... I mean, not many people at all are going to trade out of Loston, but his price may not get any higher than it is now.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely not the silliest thing. Yeah, he's got a really nice price of 370, and his break even is still lower than his average, especially in Supercoach. So, in that sense, there's the thought that maybe it's best to hold on to him. But yeah, if you're looking to get rid of a round 11 guy, he may be someone to consider.
Because a lot of people actually would be loaded up on round 11 backs. That is one area where people might be struggling a bit. So. Because they might have loaded up on Hawks or Goods would be another one who'd be in a lot of sides. But yeah, there's a fair few players who'd be common in round 11 back. So yeah, I mean, you're looking at Flosten or Goods. I mean, Flosten is actually much more expensive than Goods at the moment, but I feel like they're going to be producing similar scores in a fair few weeks. And, I mean, yeah, I'm not sure why you'd need why you wouldn't take that money and run. But, yes, I suppose the corollary to that is that, yeah, his draw does look reasonably good, at least up until round 16. Maybe, at round 17, the draw gets a lot tougher. He's got three of the top four in round 17, 18, 19. So that might be where the Tiger... bandwagon drops off, so maybe you can keep him until then. But yes, I do feel like Flosten is not the keeper that people are just assuming he is going to be at this point. Right, that will do it for the round review and for the show this week. I feel like that was actually a pretty good show, Molly.
No, that was pretty tight.
Yes, pretty tight. Yes, that's an excellent word. So, and we had no analogies of players to animals this week, which I'm very, very grateful for. And we didn't insult any regional centres or towns or cities, unlike some other media commentators in the industry this week. So I feel like we've managed to avoid all of the pitfalls that everyone else has been falling into recently. Molly, but as I said, we will be doing a bit of, as I said, only six games to talk about for the next 3 weeks. So we will be doing a bit of a an overview of who we think the top 6, 8, 2, 6 players are going to be in each of the four positions. So we'll do that. We'll roll that out over the course of the next three weeks. Okay. So everyone, thanks to everyone in the chat, and thanks to you, Molly. And we'll see you guys next week.
No worries, guys. See ya.